I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to Malby on the Spot, your weekly chance. Thanks, Anfield Index Pro, to hear the wit and wisdom of your friend and mine, Mr. Jan Malby. Let's welcome him back to our eyes and ears once again. Great to have you, buddy. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm excellent. Thanks, Trevor. It's been a couple of weeks since we last spoke, but it's been a couple of remarkable weeks, I have to say.
A couple of remarkable weeks and a remarkable season. Things keep happening that are both impressive and frustrating. And yet the Reds are still hanging in there, not quite technically top at the moment. I know someone who doesn't enjoy the phrase joint top at all, because strictly speaking, there's no such thing. You're either top or you're not. So I do get that point, but at least hanging in there in terms of the points total, with, I suppose, the opportunity for it to be, if not in our hands, then still very, very much a possibility if we can match Manchester City. That's the thing that's going to be in most people's minds. Let's start there with the big game, because it is the big story. And obviously, it being Liverpool, there's we find ourselves having to talk about referees again, and that's very frustrating. So let's start with the football part of things, because I heard the wise assessor of the game, that is Gary Neville, at halftime saying that City were obviously the better team in that half. And I had to take exception to that, Jan, because I thought they had they were all over us in the first 10 minutes. But things started to level off after that. And then in the second half, I think it was borderline embarrassing for them at times. I think they were monstered in a way that I haven't seen them before. What was your take overall in terms of the balance of the game?
A little bit like you, Trevor. Obviously, we spoke at length before the game when I was there on Sunday, and you know what kind of game do you expect? And the first thing you do is you look at Liverpool's lineup and you think, okay, nothing wrong with the talent, but there's some inexperience, and there's some inexperience in a game against Manchester City. So there's things you worry about. You worry about how well City can possibly start, and you worry if City score the first goal. As it happened, they did both of those. They started really well, was in control of the game, and also they scored the first goal, which at the time when they scored was maybe slightly against the run of play. But I agree with you. As I left the game, I was talking to some of my former teammates, and they said, the best thing that happened to Liverpool was half-time. And I said, I think that's a bit dramatic, that. I think long before half-time, we turned it into the type of game we wanted. You know, we'd made it intense, we made it competitive, And that, even for City, you know, they fluffed their lines in a situation like that. And then in the second half, it was relentless. The work effort from the players was unreal. I just sometimes wish that, and here I'm really talking about Luis Diaz, just that little bit extra composure in a couple of situations, he could have been a big hero. So as I walked away from the stadium, decided not to listen to anyone else, I thought it was an opportunity missed.
That's very much where I've landed as well. immediately and since. It feels a little bit like the most frustrating thing about it is that we've gone from a situation where it was in our hands to now it's in our hands only if Arsenal slip up in a way. And that's frustrating in many ways. If we had a game left against, you know, if looking at the fixtures that are left, it just feels a little bit like a certain amount of that advantage has been pulled away from us. That's the thing, Jan, is that on the balance of play, I thought the Reds were outstanding, so much better than City were in that second half, that it was, I would imagine, quite humbling for them. Their fallout has been quite interesting. We'll get into all that because I'm very interested to hear your take on a few things around that. But just in terms of, you said you looked at the lineup and you thought, okay, talent wise we're good, but experience wise you've got Bradley, you've got Kwanzaa, you've got Harvey Elliott, who has played a lot obviously, but you know, you've got comparative young fellas. It's safe to say they stood up to whatever tests were put to them. And it really, it just continues to be a story, doesn't it, about this man getting so much from this set of players. They just never let him down, it seems, Jan. They just never let him down. The performance level is always there.
I mean, when I was talking about experience, Trevor, I was more talking about how few of our players have actually started in the game against Manchester City, which now is the most competitive game on the planet. There's no doubt about that. They're not the two biggest rivals in the world, but it's the biggest game on the planet because it delivers a game of football that no other two teams can live with. And in terms of the way that we turned the game, we often talk about Manchester City, and you have to give them credit for, as good as they are, they also work very hard. But when you compare the work rate on Sunday, the work that we put in compared to what they did, and they have a couple now, and we can never question Erling Haaland's ability as a goal scorer. But I thought he was a bit off, and he didn't really put it in when you compare to Luis Diaz and David Nunes and our frontmen, and the amount of work that they put in is, and the young players.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch and those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every Red. We also stock official LFC merchandise, and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with 2 chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
Of course, you're always a little bit worried, aren't you? I mean, we discussed Conor Bradley, you know, he's a superstar. And when you think, also at some stage, the boy's probably going to have an average game and he might even cost a goal, isn't it? And you think, well, let's hope it's not in a game like this. Kwanzaa, everybody's worried about Kwanzaa because it was against Haaland. But I thought, you know, do you know what I saw, Trevor? You probably wouldn't have seen this because Sky might not have been that on the pitch at that time. But you know, when the players came out, I have never seen Virgil van Dijk so fired up. You know, really? it was almost as if this was his game to lead. You know, it's okay. I always recall when we played Celtic in the European Cup back in 1982, and Johan Cruyff kind of put an arm around us and went, listen, follow me, this is my game, yeah? And I always felt like Van Dijk did that on Sunday when he came out. You know, he was, you know, cheering with the crowd, and he was slapping the players, he going, come on. And it was almost as if he said, come on, boys, all you have to do is just follow what I'm doing and we'll be okay. And I thought he played like that the whole game. You know, he was back and forth. He was involved in everything. Even when the penalty was given, he sprinted 40 yards to try and say it was a red card. He wasn't a red card, but it just showed that he was fired up. And also he understood the magnitude of the game. You know, I think had we won the game, I probably think for City, it might have been over.
I'm delighted to hear you say that, because I found myself expressing that sentiment on a couple of shows, and I understand that some people might take exception to it because there's 10 games left, and yes, I understand that, but I think where you're going with that, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that psychologically it would have been a real slap for them, I think, if they'd been defeated, and that's why I know we should be you know, comparatively happy, but it feels to me like an opportunity lost to get that psychological advantage over City. I think it would have been massive, Jan.
Oh, it would have been absolutely ginormous. And I also think that, do they give up? Had they been 4 points behind Liverpool, I think they might have given up a little bit in their own minds and then obviously played for the Champions League and the FA Cup, which also would be a great season if you could win those two trophies. But I think it might just have given such a knock because they've had to fight. I'm not sure what their record is, 10 wins in the last 12 or something like that. They've had to fight this hard to be third, Trevor. They're only third in the Premier League, and they've had to fight this hard, you know. So, had they lost, they might have given up.
So, we're left with a very interesting run-in. The 10 games that remain for all three teams have been discussed to death. I think the general consensus is that possibly Arsenal have the toughest of the run-ins. I don't think you'd say either City or Liverpool have an easy one. And of course, it all depends on what's at stake for the opposition on the day. It did feel like this was the clincher game, and the fact that it's a stalemate feels like we've just kicked the can down the road a little bit, because I think, again, correct me if I'm wrong, the expectation, and listen, let's be honest, hope for Liverpool fans is that at some stage Arsenal will, if not bottle it, then have a wobble. The expectation is that City won't. And therefore, the expectation is that if we can match City's results, that should be enough to get us the title. That may not be the case now. And we have a situation where if it's not the case and Arsenal don't wobble, then it's kind of at the moment very much looking like they have a great chance. Does that seem like a fair assessment, looking at the 10 games? We could get into it now, but it just feels like it would be almost a little bit futile, because you can't predict with that grade of an accuracy over 10 games, and who knows what could happen in terms of injuries. We know all about that. Do you see where I'm going with that? That I think a lot of people are hoping for an Arsenal wobble. I think the longer we get into the season and it doesn't happen, there's doubts about that. Of course, the key time for it to happen would be when the pressure's really on. Are you expecting that from them this season, do you think they may have pushed to the next level?
Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have three podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on eplindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL roundtable there every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Listen, there's no doubt, Trevor. Arsenal are strong. They're stronger than what they were last year. There's a better look about them. They're better organised. They've improved with their signings. You know, Kai Havertz took a while, but he's now playing a role. Declan Rice has been superb. And the goalkeeper, I like the goalkeeper, David Raya. I like aggressive goalkeepers. So I think they've done really well. And I think they can easily have a very impressive last 10 games without winning the Premier League. They've currently won their last 8 Premier League games, and they've got 10 left. If they were to win all 10, they would equal a Premier League record of most consecutive wins. Manchester City and Liverpool share that record. I just don't think that's possible. And what do you need in terms of points? You need somewhere between 85 and 90. So winning 8 games probably wouldn't be enough for Arsenal. So I think that might rule them out. I think it would be harsh if they were to win maybe 16 or last 18 games, to call it. They bottle it. But I just think, and I also think with the fact that they got to go to the Etihad, they got to go to Brighton. Brighton are not in necessarily great form, but they're doing okay at home. So it's a difficult away game. They got to go to Spurs, which is a difficult game. They got to go to Wolves, which is a difficult game. I know we still got to play 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th in the league. But how many of them do you really? I don't worry about Brighton and Anfield. I don't worry about going to West Ham. There's games in there that I don't necessarily worry about, isn't it? So I just think that we probably need to win 9 out of 10. And I think we can do that. And I think that would be enough to win the title.
Yeah, and such a huge ask. And it's really interesting to find yourself in a situation where you're predicting that that's potentially possible. That in and of itself is a win for what this season was supposed to be. I'm going to ask you a daft question now, because, listen, I don't ever profess to be anything other than a typical football fan. And with that comes gut feelings and sort of superstitions and stuff like that. And when you add up over the course of this campaign situations like the Luis Diaz disallowed goal, the Curtis Jones sending off, the Virgil van Dijk sending off, the way which we were basically robbed of points against Arsenal and Spurs, by very egregious mistakes, that some of which had to be apologised for. And then you mentioned Kai Havertz, and you see Kai Havertz, who should have probably been sent off, scoring a winner for Arsenal, having been a long time in the making as an Arsenal star. And you see what happened where we have a blatant penalty denied to us in the key part of the game where we would have had a win that we were talking about. Do you get a feeling that maybe that's where is do you think stuff like that is sitting into people's minds and saying, oh, you know, the old idea of your name is on the trophy type of thing, is that where things swing? Or do you think we have enough to not concern ourselves with any let's face it, silly notions like that?
Obviously, Trevor, there is incidents you can point back at and go, wow. Some of the ones from the Spurs game, we don't know how the game would have turned out. Had the referee made different decisions, we have no idea how the games would have turned out. But because I work in the industry, Trevor, and I was working at the Arsenal-Brentford game last Saturday, you know, you try and give an unbiased view. The problem with the Kai Havertz dive is that the AR can't do anything. VAR can't step in. And the referee, to give a second yellow card, which would result in a red card, has to be 100% sure that there is no contact. And I just felt that with his position, the referee was unsure, and he's thinking, I don't want to do this. You know, I'd rather take what maybe comes with it, but I don't want to give this decision because I'm not 100% sure. And I have a lot of respect for referees sometimes, Trevor, where they go. I didn't see it. I couldn't see it. You know, my view was blocked and whatever. So I'm a little bit with that one. If VAR could have intervened, they would have given Kai Havertz a second yellow and he would have been off. But they couldn't. So they're the issues. And then that is sometimes the issues we have with VAR, isn't it? You know, we thought VAR was all about making sure that we get as many decisions right as we can. But it's still very much limited what VAR can get involved in.
Right. And The way I was driving that wasn't the typical, oh, they're all against us, the tinfoil hat, you know, conspiracy theory, everyone hates Liverpool thing. It was more the fact that these decisions, whatever the motivation for them or whether they're all random and it's just a sequence of bad luck, they're happening. And they're happening, it would appear, in favour of other teams and very kind of clearly, obviously not for for Liverpool at the moment. I'm not sure if that gets in your thinking. And I don't think it will affect how Liverpool play. But I'm wondering if it's the kind of thing that maybe takes a hold with other teams and, you know, the likes of Arsenal start to feel, all right, this could be going our way. Especially, let's take a look at that second VAR shout that we're alluding to there, that the penalty or potential penalty where Doku goes in chest high with the studs on McAllister. VAR could intervene there. Should intervene there, in my opinion. And I think the consensus seems to be that the only reason it's not given yet is because it's in that portion of the game, which kind of mirrors the early part of the game where referees don't want to do anything crazy. They probably don't want to do anything crazy that's going to cause a massive controversy in the dying seconds of a match either. To me, that's horseshit, and you just give the decision that you need to give. But I'm very interested in your take on it. Whether you thought it should have been given in the first place, and then the whole, why is it that VAR don't intervene there? Because they have the opportunity.
Well, first, Trevor, I was on comedy duty on Sunday, and obviously the on-field referee hasn't given the penalty. And then the commentator said, what do you think? I says, well, it doesn't really matter now, does it? Because there's no way VAR will overturn that. It would have been the same if he'd have given it. If he'd have given it, there's no way VAR would have overturned that. And I was told after the game that Michael Oliver, in his discussion with VAR, was very clear that he'd seen the incident clear. And he was 100%, it's not a penalty in my book. He described it as an unavoidable collision. Because Doku had his foot up there and kicked the ball and McAllister's coming towards, he felt it was an unavoidable collision. And I feel that the moment that Michael Oliver goes to VAR, I have seen this. I think VAR are worried about re-refereeing the game. And I think that, in the end, is why we land where we land. That is not satisfactory for anyone other than the referees, you know, make sort of little group and we look after these others. Can you imagine, Trevor, Michael Oliver, who by many is conceived to be maybe the best referee in the world, he goes, I've seen this. It's not a penalty. Yeah? Whoever's in that VAR room would have some balls to go, never mind, Michael. I'm giving it. I'm deciding the title race here and there. It's a fucking penalty. So, you know, it's frustrating, Trevor. It is frustrating. I understand all that, isn't it? But I also said before, we try and explain why they come to these discussions, isn't it? I mean, immediately after the game, and I was walking down all the stairs from Anfield and walking with everybody, and everybody's going mental, you know, as you can imagine. And it's like, you go, yeah, but so, there's nothing we can do, Trevor. You know what I mean? Go downstairs in your corporate lounges and get yourself a pint and just forget about it because it's gone. It's gone, isn't it? You know, And there will be, come the end of the season, you know, whoever finishes second and third will look at incidents. I'm sure Arsenal will look at that goal when he lost 1-0 at Newcastle and blah, blah, whatever. The only ones who never get involved in too much controversy in Manchester City isn't Trevor. And I don't believe in conspiracies, you know that, isn't it? But when you look at it, it is remarkable, isn't it? That there's very few incidents where you can point at where they maybe felt that they could have had a little bit more than what they get, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm insulating you from that. I'll be the crazy lunatic saying this stuff out loud, and you obviously have been on the record saying that. And I don't go for the crazy ones, but and let's have a bit of balance here. There was the whole drop ball scenario with Forest, where the whole country was convinced that it was a conspiracy to win Liverpool the league. So we have to have an amount of balance on it. I just do think in the totality, the amount of decisions that have gone against Liverpool have been, I think it's clear for everyone to see. You don't need any extra proof. And it just feels a bit weird, the whole PGMOL thing. It does feel like they're an odd set of lads. You have Mike Dean coming out calling that Nottingham Forest drop ball incident a monumental error several times in a, in an interview. And then, and this is where I want to just finish with this, VAR and Michael Oliver in concert have decided that that's not a penalty with the Doku incident. Within hours, Kyle Walker is being interviewed by Sky, and he is, it's the weirdest little thing ever. He's being asked about the incident, and he's praising Michael Oliver's professionalism, talking what a wonderful player he is. It's almost like a kind of Oprah Winfrey style interview where it doesn't seem to be about the football as such. And it's giving them an opportunity to explain the whole thing away and talk about what a wonderful lad Michael Oliver is. It just rubbed me up the wrong way. I thought it was a very odd thing. I can see how you could make an argument that it's not. But it does feel a bit strange, Jan, doesn't it, to be platforming the captain of the opposition so that they can talk about what a wonderful decision it was by a wonderful, character-filled referee, as opposed to giving Virgil van Dijk a chance to say, yeah, Michael Oliver shat the bed there. He should really have given that decision. And VAR, what are they at? Do you know what I mean?
So, first, the Nottingham Forest decision, that's not the reason that we win the game. You know, because that's 2 minutes further down the line. I agree with Mike Dean, not a monumental error, but I agree it's a very basic error that the referee should know that law of the game. And I did find that strange. As I said before, that has nothing, I don't believe that has any bearing on the result in the end. The problem with Manchester City and their owner are quite capable of controlling a lot of things in their lives, in their world, yeah? And they wanted to set the narrative before the game. On Sunday, they started with the incidents we've had with the Manchester City team bus over the years. That was brief. Nobody will ever admit it. That was brief by Manchester City. We then had the Trent comments, brief by the Manchester City press team. We then had Pep Guardiola talking about the officials, setting the narrative. And then after the game, no doubt. There's no way Kyle Walker, I like Kyle Walker, I think he's been a tremendous player. He's just one of the lads off the street, isn't he, Trevor? But there's no way Kyle Walker would have come to that conclusion himself, that what I need to do is to praise the referee. So he's been briefed. So he's setting the narrative yet again, isn't it? You know, and I don't like that. It's a spectacle, it's a theatre, whatever. It will write its own stories, you know. Let it write its own stories. I don't like this setting the narratives, you know, before games and after the games. But it is a fact, Trevor. They can't handle this fixture at Anfield. It's a bit different at Etihad, but this fixture at Anfield, they can't handle.
It feels that way, and it feels as if the as you say, the narrative management is quite remarkable, and it does get to me at times because, you know, I have to do the mugs game thing of paying for all the subscriptions for all the channels that provide the games, and then still you'll miss some of them and you're forced to watch them on a crappy stream somewhere. But you feel then twice as upset when you feel like you're being sold a pup, and it really does feel that way with Sky a lot of the time, that it is narrative management. Look, it is what it is, but it's an interesting part of the game at the moment. And in the wake of Liverpool's draw, there's been some news today that's broken, having been all but broken by the likes of Paul Joyce and Ornstein in the days leading up to it. And we're seeing confirmed today, I'm just going to read from The Guardian here, Michael Edwards agrees Liverpool return to oversee the post-Klopp era. He will...
I don't need a VPN, I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit libertyshield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Appoint a sporting director as his first job, and he will come back in a different role than he was before. He will be overseeing the club's football operations. That I'm very much of the opinion that I don't know the technical science side of football. I absolutely respect experts who do, who can go and harvest data and crunch numbers and do recruitment at the level that it was being done when Michael Edwards was overseeing things. So I absolutely get that there's a lot of positivity around this appointment, especially in the wake of the tragic news that Jurgen's heading off the other way. So we need to put a new team together, and Michael Edwards seems to be a very clever appointment. I don't quite get the level of excitement that I'm surrounded by in WhatsApp groups. Lads are losing their heads. It's like the second coming of Christ. I don't quite see it at that level myself, but then I probably don't understand quite what an impact maybe Michael Edwards had. I get the basics, but maybe other people are more interested in that side of things. What's been your response to this appointment? We're told that Bournemouth's Richard Hughes is favourite for this next appointment, the sporting director one. It seems like they're cobbling together their team to be in place for when Jurgen leaves, yeah.
So obviously we've been looking for a sporting director for quite a while. You know, Julian Ward taking over didn't work, and then Jörg Smatski came in on a short-term basis. So we've been looking around, and it's a bit like when we were looking for a goalkeeper back in the day, and everybody's going, and I remember saying to John Achterberg, come on, John, can we get a better goalkeeper than the two we had in Carriers and what's the Belgian boy called, Trevor, come on?
Mignolet.
Yeah. He said, yeah, we got somebody, but we got to wait for him to be available. And I think the same thing with this sort of setup now is that really what we want is Michael Edwards. We want Michael Edwards back, not as a director of football, but to oversee it. Because Michael, when you're a director of football, you live and die by your signings. You know, it's a good bad, it's a bad one. It's create your reputation. I don't think Michael is at that level anymore. He's above that level. So he's now going to oversee all sorts, I believe. And he's bringing in Richard Hughes from Bournemouth, which, on the face of it, looks a good appointment. Absolutely. But let's not forget that when Michael Edwards started all this a while ago, it was relatively new, and we were a mile ahead of everybody else. Now it's different because everybody's now at the same level. It's not as easy. You don't see the things that we saw 10 years ago. We're no longer the only club that sees that. Everybody sees that. You know, so it's more competitive than it's ever been. And also, Michael Edwards is now working for FSG on totally different bases, isn't it? It's not the same as back in the day when he was what he was. Now it's totally different. So I think it's a good appointment. Is it as straightforward as that? No, I refuse to believe it is. It'll be more difficult and there'll be challenges. And I do think that Michael Edwards and Julian Ward and Ian Graham and whatever they were called made some super signings in it, but we still had the man to put the icing on the cake with these signings, didn't we? You know, and I think that's important. You sign, it's this thing, and you make a good player a great player, and you make a great player an outstanding player, isn't it? And data doesn't do that, or Michael Edwards doesn't do that. The manager does that, isn't it? So, but I think I'm happy, Trevor. It's kind of the best. Yeah, it's the best choice we could have made. I feel I'm quite happy with it. There is other very good sporting directors, but I like this appointment. How it works out, I don't know. I'm more concerned about who's going to be our new manager. Could it be a case that now Michael and Richard comes, that they will look at the new manager appointment in a whole different light? Will that change? Because I do feel that the two gentlemen who's left with him in charge, Mike Gordon and Billy Hogan, would have kind of gone, the easy thing here is to give it to Xabi Alonso. You know, that would be the easiest. That would please everybody, and he's done really well. Whereas Michael might come in and go, whoa, let's look at some data here. You know, let's get to the bottom of this. So he might just change. I mean, do you know why I mentioned that?
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.